students. So it is like, in fact, not a real string theory talk. It's inspired by string theory
talk. So I'm, most of you, maybe all of you know about this idea CFT correspondence, which relates quantum generating functional of correlation functions in one d-dimensional theory at large n to the classical effective classical action on gravitational background. So the situation is as follows. Here n is a multi-index, because among the operators there could be energy momentum tensor carrying space-time dimensional space-time indices. So these are the sources varying with respect to them. I get correlation functions in this theory. This theory should be taken at large n, and it's strong Hooke coupling, and then it is related to the classical action, which is calculated on the classical trajectories with the boundary values of the fields set by the sources. So this is a idea CFT correspondence. The most seminal example of which is n equals 4 super Young Mills, related to ADS 5 times phase 5 super string, type 2D super string theory. So, this relation, in this relation, the extra coordinate appearing here in ADS space is related to the energy scale in this theory. Extra coordinate related to the energy scale in this theory. There was a statement that classical equations of motion in this theory, classical equations of motion in this theory, are related to the renormalization group equations in this theory. So this statement has two sides. One side comes from here. It's just an introduction. I'm not going really to use it, just to explain to you the idea on what I'm working on here. So on this side, the action, the idea is described as follows. This action is, in fact, is divergent. If you, for example, define the metric on anti de Sitter as 1 over z squared dz squared plus dx mu dx mu, the action is divergent due to the, in the region as z goes to 0. As z goes to 0. And you have to regularize it somehow. Put small z equals to some z, I don't know how to call it, z0. So, say. And that 0 is very close to 0. This is infrared cutoff in this theory. It is related to the ultraviolet cutoff in this theory. And now there is a question. If this guy is related to the ultraviolet cutoff in this theory, effective action, this guy then interpreted as an effective action of this theory, shouldn't depend on the cutoff. How does it happen that this guy doesn't depend on the zero, on the cutoff? And in fact, it means that these guys, the sources, should, one have to extend the sources to the fact that they depend not only on x, but as well on z0, and should scale somehow with z0 in such a manner that the whole action doesn't depend on z0. You see, we this action integral is calculated as an integral with respect to z from z0 to infinity, and contains here Lagrangian, which is not Lagrangian density, but Lagrangian. It's kind of time, so to say. And this guy depends on the fields, on the G, and they should depend as well on Z0 in such a way that the whole action doesn't depend on Z0. It is not hard to see that the dependence of these guys on Z0 should, uh, should be such that they should be solutions of the equations of motion following from this action. To me, this is a beautiful, but at the same time, rather trivial statement. This is a statement of the right-hand side of the holographic realization. There is a left-hand side of this relation, which is much more non-trivial, and in my view, is much more interesting and important, because to understand how to formulate renormalization group equations in such a theory, in such a way that there some kind of dynamics in extra dimension will be revealed, is completely non-trivial task. For example, gravity equations of motions on the right-hand side are second-order differential equations with respect to Z. So they contain second-order derivatives with respect to Z. At the same time, renormalization group equations are of the first order with respect to the derivatives with respect to Z. How does it happen that renormalization group equations are converted into second-order dynamical differential equations? This is one of the questions to address, at least one of the questions. Apart from all, how does it happen that some kind of renormalization group dynamics here becomes a generally covariant theory, which is a much more complicated question? And I think I will be able to answer on the question about the becoming. My goal in this talk to show that one can formulate renormalization group equations in this theory in such a way that they will become dynamical Hamiltonian type equations in one dimension extra. So let me explain how the idea goes. The mere formulation of this generating functional shows that one should take a kind of Wilsonian renormalization group on the left hand side, because Wilsonian renormalization group is exactly organized as follows. This is already in a sense an effective action, and we keep track of all couplings in the theory. Now the couplings are extended to become sources. It's a simple modification with respect to the Wilsonian realization group. So in the Wilsonian realization group, our action can be expanded in the complete basis of operators in the theory. And so if we demand that this guy is a renormalization group invariant, we obtain the following kind of equations. First of all, we have to implement some kind of regularization scheme here. And second, we have to demand that the sources should depend on lambda in such a way that the total dependence of lambda disappears. This way, we derive some kind of Kalman-Simanchik equation, which is usually in the renormalization group for a particular kind of series called Polchinski equation. But in any case, so in imposing this condition, we will obtain the following kind of equation. We will obtain something like that. G dot is equal to beta n as a function of all g's. So we will have infinite sequence of equations of this kind for each source corresponding to each operator from the basis of operator product expansion algebra. Operator product expansion algebra. So this is first order differential equation, and in a sense, it's one can understand this equation as a kind of Cauchy problem, because like sending lambda to infinity is going through some boundary. We set values of the couplings at some big lambda, and then the lambda plays the role of extra coordinate, that is to say, log lambda. And we evolve in this direction somehow. So, and you see in such a formulation of renormalization group, the renormalization group flow seems to be inversible unless it has some kind of attractors, et cetera, et cetera. But in principle, there is a reversible, because if you know the values of the fields at some scale, you know it in above scale or below scale. But still, this is a first order differential equation, not of the second. Apart from all ideas, CFT correspondence tells us that we shouldn't take here into account all operators from the basis. Because in this ideas CFT relation, only single trace operator should be taken into account. Because single trace operator corresponds to the single particle state in antidecision. So if we take put sources for multi-trace operators, we somehow exhaust the number of the surface becomes much more than the number of the fields in antidecision. So we should somehow restrict ourselves to single trace operators on the left-hand side. But then there is a problem because we cannot close the this Renungo flow. Because if we start from single trace operators and integrate out high energy harmonics, all the higher trace operators generate. So what do we do with them? Okay. Now, once I formulated to you the general idea how it works, let me tell you what I'm going to do. So I'm going to study this whole situation for some particular model example. So I'm going to consider Hermitian for simplicity. Hermitian matrix field theory. So it's a quadratic action looks just as follows. Quadratic action is just integral over dx trace of d nu phi squared plus m squared phi squared. So I'm not actually restricting myself to any conformal situation. I'm not considering a conformal invariance theory. At this stage, I'm just dropping all the restrictions. So I'm trying to understand whether I can formulate Renard group equations in any large M-field theory in such a way that something on the right-hand side will be observed. So that's the reason I'm considering massive fields. So the classical, the quadratic action for this guy is as follows. Possible we can add some interaction, no problem. Phi to the fourth, and et cetera. So now we want to restrict ourselves. Now we want to add sources. Sources. All the kinds of sources. Sum over n, gn, on. This, among these operators, there could be like the energy momentum tensor. On could be like energy momentum tensor, p nu, okay, which is just p nu phi, hope everybody knows, d nu phi minus f mu nu, et cetera. And they could be like all types of operators. I hope it's clear. So this is actually multi-index. So I am not even restricting myself to the single trace operator. I'm just trying to formulate now Polchinski equation. So now I am considering this kind of action. And I would like to calculate effective action in the theory. Effective action in the theory. Which is just integral over the d phi's and with this action. I'm trying to remember. Yeah, with this action. So if we demand, that this effective action. Wait a minute. Before going into that, let us transform this action to the Fourier transform. To its Fourier transform form. So how it goes, for example, with this terms. First of all, the action will look like this, ddp trace. I would like to stress that I'm not restricting even myself to renormalizable series. Nothing, like, because I'm keeping track of all couplings of infinite number of sources. I'm not restricting myself to renormalizable. So So the action will look like this. It's like phi of p, phi squared plus m squared, phi of minus p, plus lambda, and there is this p1, p2, p3, p4, and trace and delta function of the p1, p4, and so forth. Usually, Polchinski equation is written for in the Fourier transform form. So now we implement regularization. How do we do that? In the standard manner of Polchinski equation, we put here a kind of kernel, which is the function of p squared over lambda squared, where lambda is just regularization scale. And we choose such k, that it behaves, its plot looks as follows. It's a quarter of one, much below lambda, but then rapidly drops to zero. So what does it do? If you plug this action into this functional integral, it just cuts out the integral over the high energy harmonics. So it just, in fact, regularizes the action. So we put this guy here. And now our action is actually dependent on lambda. It's dependent on lambda through this guy. And as well, coupling constants become, I absorb this coupling constant into the sources because among the operators here stands operator of this form. And then I can say that the value of this coupling corresponding to trace of this source corresponding to trace phi to the fourth at the ultraviolet scale is set by the Bayer coupling. I hope it's clear. So this is just absorbed into this part of the action. So I put this first thing, and second thing, what I do, I demand that these guys, depend on some energy scale, low energy scale, say mu, much lower than lambda, in the following sense: that these guys contain harmonics, Fourier harmonics, which are not zero only for these values, and zero beyond this level. You see, I want to calculate low energy correlation functions in this theory after integrating high energy modes. So this guy, this g of gn, all gn's of x are just smooth functions of x. So if I transform them into Fourier harmonics, the Fourier harmonics for momenta lower than mu of order of one, go beyond mu, are just vanishing. Okay. Now, and they depend on lambda as well. Should depend somehow on the scale lambda. So, now I put, and what I'm telling you is just, it's just because I want to study low energy correlation functions after integration. Now, it's a standard Wilsonian renormalization group procedure. You want to study correlation functions at low energies by integrating out fields in high energies. This is the way it is described in textbooks. Sorry? Who you? Gn of p equals to zero. Ah, you mean that, yeah, that's true. No, because, just a second, how to formulate it properly. No, self-interaction is present at high energies as well, of course. Let me say so. The sources, yeah, this guy is present at high energies, of course. This guy that I put to sources, with respect to what I've arrived. Sorry, yeah, thanks for the comment. I'm sorry I forgot to say that. This guy is, of course, present at high energies. Self-interaction is present. Sorry? It's J is a function of x and lambda. And if I Fourier transform of it, to make a Fourier transform of it, I get g of t and lambda. And when t is greater than mu, it's just zero. Or like much greater than mu. So it's just characteristic scale. Nothing wrong. In fact, we can vary mu, but usually we want to consider correlation functions of varying with respect to g. We get some correlation functions. We want them to be at energy scale mu, which is much lower than the high energy regularization scale, usually. But in principle, we can take it anywhere. Okay. So now if I impose the condition that this guy is independent of lambda, this guy is independent of lambda, I get Polchinski equation. I'm not going to derive it to you here, but in principle, one can find it in textbooks. So, it sets up how this guy plus this guy depends on lambda. It defines how this guy and that guy depends on lambda. So I will call this term plus this term as S interaction. So then the equation is written for the S interaction, and it looks like as follows. Lambda d lambda acting on k squared over lambda squared times 1 over n variation of si with respect to fij of minus p fij of fgi of p plus delta s I delta f I j of t delta s I delta f j I of minus t. Okay. So this is a Polchinski. In principle, it has extra term, which is irrelevant for me. It just adds to the renormalization of the in principle, we have to add here as well a unit operator. I assume that it is added, but it doesn't matter anyway. It doesn't change my discussion. And this contribution, extra contribution, contributes to the renormalization of unit operator. But I skip it. But in principle, it is well. Just in case if somebody going to check and stuck with some. Now, this is a Polchinski equation, and usually, in fact, this part is fixed in textbooks in most of the places. So this is a Polchinski equation. And now if you plug the explicitly, I'm not going to give you the details, explicitly this SI, absorbing this into one of the couplings, you get the equation of the following type. On the left-hand side, you get some sum over n's, gn dot. Dot is just lambda d lambda. Gn dot on is equal to, here is some coefficient, let me call it alpha, as well, sum over n on the right-hand side. Well, the left-hand side is more or less obvious. It's just like I plug gn on with the integral, of course, with this integral and sum, and differentiated just gn. The right-hand side is a bit trickier to get, but not so extremely hard. So you get integral as well, alpha and gn, and in principle, some non-local terms, which you are then expanding. expanding to make local using operator prod expansion. So you, schematically I'm writing. It's like NM gamma NM ON ON. This is the, this is what you get on the right hand side. This is what you get on the right hand side. It says, well, not so hard to see. For example, this term generates multiple operators, double, like for example, this kind of terms, and this term generates this kind of operator. Okay, now to go further. I'm just describing you standard randomization group procedure. To go further, you average it with respect to high energy harmonics. Means that you integrate over the phis with momenta between low energy scale mu. That was the reason to inserting that scale mu and the energy scale lambda. Energy scale lambda. Then, in this place, you can use operator product expansion. Operator product expansion. CNMK. OK. OK. And then the equation, because we have a complete basis of operator, we can put to zero terms standing in front of each operator, and we get equation of the form G dot N, beta N of all G. So exactly that equation which I told you. This is just standard procedure, nothing else. Okay. Okay. But now coming back to our problem, IDS within IDS. Yeah. Coming back to the fact that we have to consider here only single trace operator, then we will get something like that. Here will be single trace, and here will be double trace operator. What you gonna do with that? You already cannot use this procedure. Apart from all, when we take large n limit, when we take n to infinity, we have so-called factorization property that if we have average of on, om, it is equivalent to on, om, plus something which is of order of n, 1 over n squared. Factorization procedure. It means that at large n, in fact, I can express all operators algebraically through single trace operators. Algebraically, any operator from the complete operator algebra, I can express as some polynomial of a single trace operator. Okay. Now, let me go on with a concrete example. So I would like to consider particular theory, reduce myself to some particular type of the couplings here. So I restrict myself to the following situation. To the sum over Gn, sum over n. Here n is already not a multi-index, it's just an index. Integral over d dx, Gn of x, trace phi n of x. So I want to even not consider all the single trace operator bases, but just of this type. All what I'm going to say, to some extent, will be true for the case if I consider a more general coupling. I will describe which one when I'll show you the Fourier transform form of it. So I want to consider this situation, only subspace of the couplings. So let me write it in Fourier transform form. And here I have the following situation. I have integral over d dk1, sum over n from 0 from 0 to infinity. I put n here, rescale all the sources such that they scale as 1 at in large n limit, and the action scales as n squared in the limit as n goes to infinity. So ddkn trace of phi k1 phi n gn minus k1 minus chi n. So this is just a Fourier transform of this, nothing else. In fact, if I want to consider more complicated couplings, including derivatives, single trace operators, but including all possible derivatives, all possible single trace operators, what I should change here is that I should consider g as a function not of the sum of all k, but as a function of separately k1 and kn. That would include, in fact, most of the formulas which I'm going to write will be valid even for this case. But this case is particularly interesting for the reason which will become clear a bit later. So it's clear what I mean. If I want to consider most general single trace operator basis, I just put here sources of the fold of this type instead of this. Okay. Okay, now I plug this into the Polchinski equation. Into the Polchinski equation, and what I get is the following. The equation becomes as follows. Let me write it. So it's sum over, sorry, it will be a bit long, but L1 to infinity, I will explain the notation. Right here. Because it will be. So the equation looks as follows. Sum over L from 1 to infinity, integral over KL. I will explain the notation what that means. KL of a whole bunch of KL. I will explain the notations. I'm sorry that I have to write first and then. So this is the left-hand side of Polchinski equation. Equals to minus 1/2 integral over pi k dot of pi squared over lambda. Dot means differentiation with d over d log lambda. 1 over n sum over k from 1, sum over m from 1 to infinity, sum to minus 1, s from 0 to minus, integral over k m minus 1, m plus 1, times t m minus s minus 1, as a function of k m minus s minus 1. G. I hope I won't lose you by the time I'll write it. It's a bit complicated, but it will become simple in a moment. G of minus k m minus 1 plus sum over L and G from 1 to infinity, integral over K, Q, G minus 1, K minus 1, L plus G minus Q as a function of K L minus 1 Q G minus 1 times Gn GL of minus L minus 1 minus P and G G as a function minus Q G minus 1 plus P. So let me explain the notation here. First of all, I took the average of the Polchinski equation in the same manner as I did it before with respect to the high energy harmonics. Second, dot is just equivalent to d over d log lambda, as I say. Third, what means integral chi L? It's just ddk1 ddkl. Similarly, here is just over q and over k. Integral over p as well. This is integral over p. I hope it's clear. Now, what means t? T is just a vacuum expectation value. Tl. Tl, or as a function of chi l, is just a shorthand notation for the following thing. It's just trace of phi k1 phi kl. Average. So I just explicitly flag that action here. Varied it with respect to phi, disentangled the indices, and found that from this term appears only single trace operator. Huh? Oh, sorry. This is a double trace operator, and that's single trace operator. So the first term is just double trace operator. And I used the factorization property valid at log n. You see, here it was the average of complicated product of double trace operator, and I just used the factorization property. So what I'm saying so far is valid only at log n limit. At log n limit. Here it's necessary to have it of the same order at log n, because the G scale as 1. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, indeed. I get this way, and now I'm going to go on with changing the definition, but wait a minute before that. So now I get this equation. This equation, and I'd like to stress that you see, I started from something which didn't contain derivatives, and here it seems that there are no derivatives generated as well, but it's not true. In fact, the derivatives are generated, because if you calculate this guy explicitly with respect to the low energy harmonics, you will see that it contains all the powers of the derivatives. So it's just a if you separate your field phi into phi, how do you take this average? You separate field phi into its classical background value, phi zero, which contains low energy harmonics with momenta less than mu, and high energy harmonics with momenta greater than mu and less than lambda. In fact, you can take these guys as solutions of the equations of motion following from this action with these sources, but it's not even necessary because in any case in the shuffling because they contain the different harmonics, the interference terms are suppressed. But in any case, you separate this and you integrate over these guys and get effective action for this guy. So this guy will look like as a trace phi zero to the n plus derivatives. So the whole derivatives are generated, but they are all encoded in this form. So now what I get the an equation which is closed with respect to G and T. G and T.
Coupling constant that you should keep track of somehow?
What do you mean?
The GNs. So when you say you make a list of all operators, so you started with a subset, not all your
operators.
You only started with a subset, and so you're only keeping track of the GNs.
Yeah.
But the derivative should have other, the own.
Well, then I didn't want to add them. I didn't add them. And in this
equation, they appear in a whole bunch of them appears inside these expressions, inside the T's. So it means that they are generated with one and the same source standing in front of them. If I restrict myself, but this is like trivial. I mean, if you plug it here, that's what you get. That's what you get. And you can disentangle all the higher trace, higher derivative operators. But it's better to keep them inside. You'll see why. To keep them inside this kind of guys, inside the averages. Yeah. No, but if I, for example, would include higher trace here, sources for higher trace operators, in front of them will be standing averages containing the higher traces. But distinguish the average of such a guy containing traces from the average of such a guy not containing traces. I don't know. But this is, what I'm saying is just trivial. And in fact, this is the place where most of the people question it. For example, Palchinsky as well, from my discussion. But I don't understand what's the problem with understanding what the question is the following. You see, I started from the operators which do not contain derivatives. In the renormalization group expansion, there will be appearing operators containing derivatives. So I should somehow add sources for them as well, but for some reason I do not do that, and my equation is closed with respect to the. Yeah. They depend not on sum. They depend. No, G depends on the sum. It's just always. T depends on all k's separately. But this is if you what do you mean? It's like I put it to depend on G, it's just the way it appeared.
Right hand side
already. No. What you are saying is the following thing. Wait a minute. What you are saying is. Is the following thing. Suppose I would start from what I was going to say. You see. Okay, the right hand side already depends separately on every k, and I cannot absorb a renormalization of it into the g. You see. So it's in agreement with understanding of what's going on. But to me, it is not important. What is important that this equation is closed and depends only on T's and G's. It's not closed with respect to the G's. So it's still a problem. But it depends only G's and T's. G's and T's. T's depend separately on each K. And I cannot, like, for example, using the same procedure as for the complete operator, T will depend on lambda as well. The operators themselves do not depend on lambda, but after the averaging, they depend on lambda. Okay. The averaging is actually, I would like to stress, is done with respect to not a free action, but with respect to the full action. To the full action. That's important as well. The averaging here is done with respect to this full action. Okay. I hope it's clear. This is an important moment before I go further, because further I will say something already, how you call it, going beyond the standard minimization group procedure. So far, one could ask, why should I be so happy? Because I cannot disentangle from this equation a minimization group equation for these guys, because these do not form a complete basis and depend separately on k, while this is depending only on the sum of the k's. So why should I be happy? Okay, but next step is the major observation. Okay. Now, to close the system of equations, I have to derive renormalization group equations for these guys as well. And how do I do that? Perturbatively, I can do that. But I want to do something similar to this, closed, such that I will get two types of equations which are closed with respect to T's and G's. But you see, what I demanded is the renormed group invariance of the effective action, which depends on G's. But then there is a Legendre transform of it, which is an effective action, how do I call it, G, depending on T's. How are they related? By a Legendre transform, which is just a functional Fourier transform, G of T is just I of G minus G T with the sum, and then I solve the equation that T is equal DI over G, DG. I solve this equation with respect to G, plug it here, get this guy. Okay, but now pay attention to this equation. What does it say, this equation? I take a classical, you see, I'm considering this effective action as a classical action, calculated with respect to some boundary values of the fields. You see, I formula, you see what I mean?
For the field, momentum from zero to lambda.
Yeah.
Right.
But no. I of G.
You mean that I integrate it out, but then it depends on G's, yeah, which are lower, containing lower momenta. All fields up to mu. Up to mu. And these guys depend as well on the T's, which are low energy. So now I want to implement this equation. This equation is nothing but the relation between momentum and position. So T is just a conjugate momentum to G. I would like to stress that T, which is this guy, is conjugate to this. T, which is the average of trace phi, this guy is conjugate to G. Not if I expand it and take only trace phi zero to the power of n and the rest. If I drop all the rest of the terms, this guy will not be conjugate to the G. I hope it's clear. Sorry? No, you can. If you vary with the, if you take this effective action G, and vary it with respect to this G, taken as the sum of the momentum, you get this average, which depends separately on each. This is, no. Again, look. Here is the coupling. So I have the functional integral. So what I'm saying is trivial. So this part is zero, plus sum, here standing G's, depending on the sum of k's, and integral of the trace of separate files. If I arrive with respect to this guy, yeah. I get the average. Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's true. That's true. It's not. It's not that separately. I get. Yeah, that's true. 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 It was an integral with the total moment. So where is the? Where did I? But then it should help me to derive the equation for the integral. For the integral of the T's. For the conjugate to the G's. How do I do that? I observe that the equation to this T should be of Hamiltonian conjugate to those. Because if I write this, Sorry? Maybe T-bar. T-bar, that's true. That's true. So, but for the T-bars, which are the integrals, I have to get the equation, which is just conjugate to the equation for the G's. So you see what I mean? I have to get the, I'm expecting, this is already kind of extra move with respect to the standard procedure. So I expect this guy to be as a differential of some Hamiltonian, which depends on G and T bar over the D T bar. And this guy as a minus DH of the same G and T over the D G. So I expect to get this kind of system of operation. No. It's okay. I vary. What I'm going to do here is exactly. In T bar. And it depends on T bar as well. So which I, okay, this term is in fact which is the one which is causing trouble for me, as usual. That too, because you see, it's apart from all, while this term is local, doesn't depend on p. You see the integral over the p factors out, and this term is non-local. It contains dependence on P, and I cannot really deal with it carefully. So, for example, even if I do it this way, I obtain an equation where the Hamiltonian doesn't have a concrete dimension, concrete dimensionality, because it contains terms which are, it's not like a Hamiltonian is not like an integral over ddk and something, local distribution. It contains multiple integrals. So this term causes a trouble, but now let us look at it more carefully. So where can I clean this? Let us look at it more carefully. Well, this is a part which is, okay. It's non-local, and it contains this shuffling between P's and Q's. Now, I look that at the fact that this this guy here is just basically close to the delta function of pi squared minus lambda squared. K dot is behaving as pi squared over lambda squared because it's practically as a step function. So it's centered around pi squared and around lambda squared. And then so this momenta p here are of order of lambda. And this q's here standing, every one of them is of order of mu. Of order of mu. You see what I mean? So the argument, just because these keys contain only low energy momenta. So these k's are all of the order of mu, and the p's are all of order of lambda. So if mu much less than lambda, the arguments of these guys, are bigger than lambda. Of course, there is this drawback due to the fact that I am summing over all L's, and they in fact any number of K's are present. But I assume that at low energy, at very low energy, the arguments of K's, if mu is much less than lambda, the arguments of these guys are bigger than lambda. So these guys are just vanishing because their arguments by assumption were put on to be, they are demanded to be non-zero for the scales less than lambda. So my proposition is that that term dies out at low energies. So this, if I can drop this term, that is a speculation. I understand that it's not quite, but the reward will be, you hopefully appreciate the result. The result will be beautiful. Now, if I drop this term, then I don't have this trouble, and I can do the whole procedure. In fact, I can write the following definition of the moment. If I... In a sense. I don't quite... Frankly speaking, I'll try to give you the arguments why I can drop it in the infrared. But let me write what I get first. But... frankly speaking, I honestly, that term causes me a trouble. In fact, I should say that this term in a recent paper by Douglas and co-authors, Matsukata and Shlomo Razamat, is such a term, not this term particularly, such a term in a different theory is related to higher spin theory, And one more comment. If I would use the couplings for all single trace operators, such that G's would depend on K's as well, separately on each K, I do not need to drop this term. The whole argument will go smoothly because the G's are conjugate to T's. You see what I mean? In that case, it goes smoothly. But then there is no this beauty which I'm going to tell you about this term. Now, after that, I can invent the momentum, Pn, which is just 1 over n integral over p1, pn, delta. So it depends on p, minus p1, minus pn, and this pn separately on pn depending. So this guy will be conjugate exactly to the g, to the g's. And if I use the following transformation, first of all, I transform back into X space. I'm going to write you the Hamiltonian. So then you see I can vary left-hand side and right-hand side with the t, and I get equation for the d depending on g and t. And similarly, I write the conjugate equation for the t, for the t. So the right-hand side is the Hamiltonian. This guy is just the Hamiltonian. I'm trying to write it in a simpler form. These are already without any tricks, just straightforward calculation. So if I do to Fourier transform of this guy and use the following guy, which depends on lambda, on S, and on X, and S is the following transform. It's the sum over K, S, sigma. Sigma to the power of minus K plus 1, P, K, lambda X. And I make a Fourier transform of G, which is just lambda sigma X is just a sum over K, sigma K, GK, lambda X. So with these two guys, the Hamiltonian, this Hamiltonian, this Hamiltonian, you see this term is just dropped. I mean, you can change it into the redefinition of lambda because it, nothing in the right-hand side depends on P. The integral over this factor is out. I can change it into the redefinition of the lambda. Then, what remains is the following thing. Is the Hamiltonian of the following form. The Hamiltonian looks like this. H integral minus P to P d sigma d dx pi squared g prime times g prime, where g prime is just a differential of g with respect to the sigma. So the right hand side, this expression, can be written in such a simple form in this after this redefinition. Now, the dependence on X is kind of trivial because nothing contains the differentials of X. And I basically have quantum mechanics for each separate X. For the Hamiltonian, if I now write the equations, dropping the dependence on X, for these guys, what I have is the following equation. So G dot is just 2 pi G prime, and P prime is 2 pi P prime. These two equations. If I write equation only for the G, it becomes as follows. Minus DT G dot G prime plus 1 half D sigma G prime squared. Equals to zero. This is nothing but integrable Bürger-Schwab equation. Bürger-Schwab equation. It is integrable. All solutions of it are known. So the system this system is actually an integrable system. One can even write explicitly for it infinite number of integrals of motion. And moreover, in this theory, such an equation appeared already in different contexts, in context of matrix models. When one considered matrix model, so when D was equal to 1, I'm talking about Das and Jivitsky theory, and considered effective theory for this model, it was exactly the same kind of theory, Das and Jivitsky. So my interpretation of what is going on here is as follows. At low energies, this theory, has a Landau pole. So in a sense, it's trivial. If you take lambda to infinity, it becomes a free theory. So in the far infrared limit, this theory has a Gaussian stable point. So it's like flows, Renon group flows around this free theory. And my interpretation is what's going on here is that in the low energy limit, this Hamiltonian flow describes exactly the flow around that Gaussian point. And that's an argument why I can drop this term. This is one thing. And it's not conformal, yeah, in fact. And moreover, because I didn't take into account the derivatives, I don't have energy momentum tensor on the right-hand side, so I don't have graviton. And I don't see the theta. That's true. Yeah, but the goal was the following, to formulate a renormalization group such that it will be on the right-hand side described as a Hamiltonian flow. It's not quite a success even for this simple model, including this term. But again, I'm stressing that if you will include G's containing all derivatives, you will get a Hamiltonian equation. It won't be that beautiful because it won't contain these dynamics. But the Hamiltonian can be written explicitly. So you will have two types of. So you will have G's depending on separately all K's and T's depending separately on all K's. And you will have the Hamiltonian. I'm sorry, in this note I don't have it explicitly, but if you are interested, I can write it. It doesn't look much more complicated than this one, but it is the Hamiltonian of the form. Extra dimension is just the energy scale. What do you mean? No, I don't do that. So I have this kind of guy depending separately on all k's, and I have this kind of guy depends separately on this guy on all k's. And H is of the following form. It contains multiple integrals of the k's, but it contains t squared times g plus g squared times t. This kind of structure. Very similar to what is written here. So that was the goal, that in fact, if you implement at large n limit, if you restrict yourself to the single trace operator, and take large n limit and factorization property, renormalization group can be formulated as a Hamiltonian flow, where the Hamiltonian for this particular case, for this particular theory, can be explicitly written. Huh? In what sense? Why?
You mean that
it has a runaway direction? Well, I don't know. Does it? Because, like, it doesn't matter indeed. I don't. It doesn't really scare me. But in fact, does it really have? Because it's not. It's a momentum conjugate to the G. We have a Poisson structure between G and P. It's not that I have two fields. So it's not like a cubic action. But yeah, it like contains some. Well, that's what I'm not sure that it's true, that it doesn't have a vacuum. If it was like G cube or T cube, T cube I am not even sure, but G cube, it wouldn't have a vacuum. But for this particular case, why? It, this is momentum, and does the Hamiltonian of... maybe it's true, but does this Hamiltonian not have... Does this Hamiltonian have a problem with the... Is it bottom left? Okay, anyway, I don't know. I just don't know. But that doesn't scare me. But in any case, so you can formulate the Hamiltonian, the renormalization group procedure as a Hamiltonian flow. So that's the main point. Main point for those who are interested in ADS-CFE. But for me, it was important the observation that in some cases the Renon group flow becomes beautiful. It has these beautiful features. And apart from all, I should confess that this is rather unexpected because it's not like a fixed point. It's like a fixed cycle. Because what does it mean that the system is integrable? It means that if I choose proper variables, the Hamiltonian evolution in the system goes in cycles. So it's like a fixed cycle in the infrared. I should say that it's up to this point that I'm not completely sure that one can honestly do this stuff. But the presence of this kind of cycles was predicted even in the original paper of Wilson and Kogut in that physics report. They were saying that they cannot exclude this possibility, and even I remember they gave some arguments in what circumstances it can appear. So that's it. That's all what I wanted to say.
Sorry for.